Learn the tools for effective firm leadership with ACEC's Business of Design Consulting, a six-week virtual course to help you build management expertise to help your firm thrive. Whether you're a CEO looking to mentor your firm's future leaders, or an executive wanting to develop your own leadership skills, the Business of Design Consulting is the place to learn. Act soon. The upcoming session begins on April 6th. To learn more and register, visit acec.org.
Welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. As part of its ongoing Future of Engineering Roundtable discussion series, the ACEC Research Institute last month held an event surrounding the issue of renewables and sustainability in a post-pandemic world. And this focused largely on the challenges that the pandemic has presented on the economy and the fact that policies moving towards climate change mitigation and adaptation, initiatives by governments, largely have been impacted by the pandemic and its effects on the economy and on government. And we were joined by a distinguished panel of experts on this subject, and I'm very pleased to be joined by one of those experts today. I am joined by Tommy Wells, and he is the director of the Department of Energy and Environment for the District of Columbia. He was appointed in January of 2015, and he's chiefly responsible for protecting the environment and conserving the natural resources of the District of Columbia, which we appreciate as DC residents and residents of the surrounding area. Tommy's team is comprised of approximately 300 environmental professionals who collectively work to improve the quality of life for residents and natural inhabitants of the nation's capital. And for those of you who have not been to DC recently, please come when we open up, because it is a beautiful place to come, not only for the historic monuments and everything in the city, but the nature that surrounds the district. It's something that tourists don't get to see as much, and they should. So Tommy, thank you so much for first being on the show and your participation in the panel.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
So I know the conversation that you had with the ACEC Research Institute, really focused on the issue of net zero emissions. In your mind, what's been the biggest driver of moving net zero forward when it comes to the built environment?
So it's really kind of redefined the playing field of what we try to accomplish. The climate change, how do we reduce our carbon? How do we stop burning fossil fuels? And to exemplify that, almost every jurisdiction, every state, most cities like ours have to do a comprehensive energy plan every 5 years. And so that comprehensive energy plan used to be, this is how much energy we use, and this is how much we're going to grow in the next 5 years, and this is where it currently comes from, and this is how we're going to meet the need in 5 years. And so it was always about capacity. So About 6 years ago, 5 years ago, when we did our comprehensive energy plan, we did something. Instead of measuring how much energy we're going to need, we measured how much greenhouse gas reduction we're going to get over the next 5 years. Our mayor had signed on with other jurisdictions a pledge to get to net zero by 2050. And so we did not have a roadmap. It was just a pledge. It was a goal. So we took our comprehensive energy plan and said, even if we don't know some of the things that'll be invented along the way, and we're not sure exactly how we're going to get there, let's start the roadmap. And so our five-year plan started with greenhouse gas reduction. And so when you view it that way, you have a different perspective. Instead of just how much power do you have and how much you're going to need, you view it in a very different way. And so to reduce greenhouse gases, the way to do it is twofold. One is you need clean energy. Mm-hmm. And the other is you reduce the pie. You shrink the pie of how much energy you use. And so the more you shrink the pie, the greater the pieces or the slices that come from green energy become. as you grow them themselves. So it's a exponential kind of difference. And so what it means for us is that we have to shrink the pie of energy. And for DC, we baseline most of our things, whether it be greenhouse gas or energy use, we baseline it from 2006. And since 2006, our nation's capital, Washington, DC, has grown faster and larger than it has since World War II.
Mm-hmm.
We're back up to over 700,000 people. We're larger than two other states, and we're continuing to grow. But at that same time, since 2006, we've reduced our electricity consumption in our commercial buildings by 3%.
Yeah.
And anybody listening knows how we did that. You start using Energy Star appliances. Mm-hmm. You just start using new efficiencies. And even if though we've added more buildings and more people and, you know, more commercial activity in the city, it's not unreasonable to say, and you know what, we've actually reduced our electricity consumption by 3% in the commercial sector.
Mm-hmm.
So that is reducing the pie. Now, for the district, what does this mean? I would say in our report of looking at greenhouse gases that are caused by the District of Columbia, 74% of greenhouse gases from DC are caused by our built environment, buildings. Only 24% comes from vehicles. Mm-hmm. And vehicular traffic. So if you really want to hit the target to reduce greenhouse gases, you have to do something to reduce the pie about buildings.
Yeah.
And so we passed the first building energy performance standards in America. New York City did it right after us. And essentially what that means is that we have all these incentives that other states, other jurisdictions have, say, hey, look, we'll give you rebates on LED light bulbs. You know, if you weatherize, you get a tax credit for these nice new windows. What this says, if you don't do it, and our standards go into place now, but we measure within 5 years, if you don't get above the average, according to Energy Star of our buildings, at average or above, you'll have a substantial fine.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be cheaper to put in the energy retrofits. And it's hard to put it all onto your tenants when we're going to fine, you know, the building owner, and they have to figure out, you know, do they pass the costs onto their tenants? Then they become not a competitive building. And that's how we begin to reduce the pie. And we're using Energy Star ratings. So we have Energy Star ratings going back 7 years for all the buildings over 50,000 square feet in Washington, DC. So we have a baseline to work from. And what you have to do is you either have to come up with your own plan to get above the average, or we will do a prescriptive one for you. And that's what you'll have to follow. Now, obviously you want to do your own plan because then you can figure out your own financing. Mm-hmm. And all those things. But it's reducing the energy footprint of our buildings. It's generally measured in electricity and gas usage, and it is translated into greenhouse gas, you know, impact. So that's what it means for us.
Yeah.
We have building energy performance standards, and something like this is going to happen in every city in America. The question will be the size of fines. Who's exempt? Mega churches, are they exempt? Mm-hmm. Affordable housing, multifamily buildings, is that exempt? So it will be, who does it apply to? Currently in DC, it applies to every single building. And then we're going to come down eventually to 10,000 square feet, and we'll keep moving down to who is impacted, that they have to get above the average. And as any person that's listening, you know the math. As soon mm-hmm. as you get above average, the average moves up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That's the route.
So let's look at obstacles to that. I mean, I would imagine that in DC, it seemed as though the way that you explained it, that buildings and the built environment, the property owners seem to, this is generally an attractive thing for potential tenants, that that being more sustainable, reducing your carbon footprint, especially for corporate clients who probably have this in their own internal CSR or their own strategic plans to be more environmentally conscious, that they want to be able to go into units that have better ratings for emissions or energy consumption. What have been the biggest obstacles that you've seen in the district to achieve this goal? And, you know, do you think that it's going to be similar obstacles outside of the district and in other cities as they start to adopt these policies?
Well, there's two major obstacles. And the first is what you started this podcast with, where you talked about what's different in the pandemic.
Yeah.
So let me just say, the future, especially of our commercial buildings, is not fully known. Mm-hmm. We have the highest vacancy rate in the history of the District of Columbia. And so, no, without question, the building owners are coming to us saying, hey, wait a minute, you can't do this.
Yeah.
We're not going to have, we don't know how much capital we can invest and how much we can pay off. We don't know even what our buildings are worth. Because with teleworking, we don't know if we'll ever go back to the same occupancy rate that we were at. And, you know, we've all seen the impact of teleworking. So if you have some of the highest per square foot office space, you know, in the region, and you can cut that in half and your customer doesn't know it, because a lot of the back of the office functions are now happening out of people's houses, why wouldn't you do it?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what the carrying cost, you know, they bought these buildings, they built them with a large, you know, they paid full price and they've got to service their debt at the same time. How are they going to retrofit their buildings?
Yes.
So the problem is we don't have time to figure that out. Climate change is upon us. In Washington, D.C., we know that our climate has changed. What has it meant for us? So we're having increased flooding, and not just that our tidal rivers have risen by almost a foot, but the microbursts of the floods within the District of Columbia are starting to knock out assets. It's costing mm-hmm. us money. And we know we're going to have to slow down climate change because the whole diaspora of people moving away from the coast, moving out of very hot areas, it's destabilizing the world.
Yeah.
So we are a city that have a lot of people that care about that sort of thing. So the voters want us to go full speed ahead. The building owners are anxious and pushing back.
Mm-hmm.
So the uncertain economic viability of the commercial sector is unknown. And that's one major barrier.
Is there, with that, I mean, the other unknown, honestly, is something I noticed the last time I was in the district going to our office, is the fact that there is no rush hour anymore. That right now, the amount of vehicle traffic going in and out of the district is significantly less than it usually is in a normal day. Do you think that there is some kind of reallocation of those, you know, the inputs? Because as you mentioned, you know, the built environment still is the main focus, you know, vehicle traffic, not as much, but is the reduction in emissions from vehicle traffic within the district going to be able to reshuffle the deck as far as, you know, how much of the built environment is going to, you know, be necessary in that plan?
Well, that's a great question. We've got the pandemic and we've got human behavior. Mm-hmm. We've got the precautions. So you're exactly right that traffic has reduced dramatically, but at the same time, taking public transit, electric public transit, which reduces your carbon footprint,
yeah,
has substantially cut back. So it's got to all get balanced out. We also know that buildings that are not occupied as much are taking less less energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we can continue to push in a lot of ways. Frankly, this is not popular to say, but energy is cheap in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
that it's rare that building owners make decisions based on the cost of their energy.
Yeah.
It's cheap. And we're unlike New England further up, or Boston. And so as energy potentially costs more, we've got room to say, let's require you to buy more renewable energy. Mm-hmm. Let's say that it's 17 cents kilowatt hour coming out of a offshore wind farm in Virginia or Maryland, as opposed to, you know, 11 cents or 8 cents off natural gas. We currently require a certain portion of all energy purchased for DC to be renewable. And you can buy renewable energy credits, but as jurisdictions across the region require the same thing, those energy credits become more scarce, which helps fund more green energy. So I do think that if we can't get the building retrofits, we push harder on renewable energy that's mm-hmm. purchased.
So from your perspective, looking at DC and then looking at what's happening across the country, who do you think is leading the charge right now? Who's further ahead on net zero? Is it the utilities industry or is it government?
That's a great question. My belief, I'm very clear about this. I believe that the greatest gains we make is in direct regulation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not apologetic about that at all, that we need to regulate our way into our goals. And it's going to be the government that drives that. If you just look back, you know, I'm old enough to remember when LA was just known for smog. It was not as, you know, it's almost as bad as Beijing. You know, you were shortening lives. It was awful. Then we came up with CAFE standards for cars. And now the air compared to Beijing and other major cities like it, LA air is much cleaner. You can see from one end to the other of the city almost. And so the regulatory environment has radically changed and improved our environment. The Clean Water Act substantially started cleaning up our rivers, cleaning up our oceans, and then the Clean Air Act doing the same. So in terms of how we get there, the innovation is going to have to be in the regulated utilities. It's going to have to be in the private sector, the innovations, but the requirements for the innovation will come from the government. Now, we have a new administration who will incentivize and invest in that innovation. It's best when the government can, on new technologies, take the risk. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, what we've done in DC, we've created something called a Green Bank, where we've got a budget of $16 billion, 700,000 people. And so we're not huge. So our Green Bank is being capitalized at about $115 million. And the main reason for the Green Bank is to help with the risk.
Yeah.
Let's take the first loss. If you're going to put in a geothermal system that takes heat off the sewer system to heat a building, and financiers have never seen this before and said, you're going to put your building at risk, that you're dependent on the sewer pipe, we're going to invest in that with you. If you're going to go into an area where we put a regulation that says you have to participate in this microgrid, which has a green source for energy, what we're used to in America is that every individual building's on their own. Mm-hmm. If you have a Marriott or Hyatt's, they bundle their buildings and buy energy. If we said, if you go into this neighborhood, you have to buy energy from that neighborhood grid, they won't go.
Yeah.
And so now what we're going to have to move towards is, you're going to have to buy energy from that grid. Again, if we're taking heat off the sewer system, if we're taking cooling off the rivers that go by and start sharing that and balancing it between buildings, I mean, just look at everybody worried about fresh water, drinking water. Well, mixed use development is the future. So gray water, if you have an office building next to a downtown apartment building, that apartment building showers and uses a whole lot of gray water. Why wouldn't that office building, which does not use as much water, think about how much you use in a building, to flush their toilets and maybe even use for their cooling towers coming off of the building next to them, instead of everybody sourcing it from the fresh water source.
Yeah.
It's about rebalancing and making buildings work together. And the government's going to have to come up with building codes, zoning codes, and regulations that support and allow that to happen.
That's a really good point, because it does seem in the conversations that I've had with engineers on a variety of different subjects, looking at the future, there's been more of this discussions of systems engineering, that everything has to be looked at as a system instead of an individual piece of the built environment. And there is opportunity there, as you said, when local governments are starting to figure out what the regulatory framework is going to be for this, and the building codes and the associated regulatory structure, that engineers have to play a role in this, in helping to guide the discussion, and at least being heard within the discussion, which is, I think, one of the things that, you know, our ACEC New York chapter, I know, has been very successful in, is getting into the ground floor, saying, if you're going to be starting, if you're gonna, for New York, for example, they started talking about the skins of the buildings and what are they going to be used material wise for the skins of the building to reduce, you know, energy costs. The engineers getting in at the ground floor of those discussions helps possibly improve the end result, but also, you know, open up opportunities for different kind of project work, because retrofitting, designing systems is going to change over time. So I think your point's important.
Yeah, and you know, a building built in New York City should not be exactly the same building built in DC.
Absolutely.
You know, in New York, you need to be able to harvest the cool air during the shoulder seasons, especially, and not just be a sealed envelope with a sealed HVAC system. Mm-hmm. And in DC, we need to take advantage of, you know, shorter winters.
Yeah.
How we harvest ambient air from the outside, how we harvest sunlight and balance sunlight to help light our buildings, those kinds of things. We're used to buildings being a whole, you know, environmental ecology all within those walls. Now we're looking, you know, what we're looking at is, how does that building interact with, say, stormwater?
Yeah.
You know, if you have to capture stormwater, why not do something with it? If you're going to have bioswales in front of your building, how can you do landscaping that's not above grade, but below grade, so it absorbs the water?
Mm-hmm.
There's just all different things, but you have to, you know, smart growth used to be about, is it mixed use development? Is it walkable? Smart growth has to be more about, where are you? How much water do you need? How hot does it get? The future of DC, we're going to be more like Nashville. Mm-hmm. In the next 30 years. So let's look to Nashville for what's smart. The systems that we use for the future and how we invest is, it cannot be everybody has the same Applebee's.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, it's an interesting point. We are going to be more like Nashville. And, you know, the environment is changing. It's what you said earlier about microbursts. I've been living here for over 15, 20 years around, and I can't remember the number of tornado warnings we would get in an average summer. And all of a sudden, it seems like out of nowhere, we started getting National Weather Service texts saying there's a tornado warning in areas that I'm like, why is there a tornado warning for upper Northwest DC? And they're happening with more regularity.
Well, that's a good point. National weather alerts that come across your phone is when life, health, and safety is at risk. We had our first weather alert about almost 2 years ago, ever in the District of Columbia, and that's internal flooding. People were standing on top of their cars. They were not on the Potomac River. They were not on the Anacostia River. They were inside DC, standing on top of their cars to keep from being washed away.
Well, someone kayaking down K Street.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, I saw the picture of the guy kayaking down K Street, not so far from our office, and I'm like, I've never seen this in my life. Last question before I let you go, and it's more of the achievement. I mean, you've been working on this for a while. I think that DC is positioning itself to be a leader in this effort. What's the one achievement that you're most proud of related to the net zero movement that you want to kind of talk about?
Well, I think that the whole idea of re-embracing nature is kind of coming across the country in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be if there were bats in your eaves, you would call animal control. Now we've got people lined up for free bat boxes and it controls mosquitoes. We are putting bioswales and green infrastructure all across the city in order to absorb rainwater, but it also starts cooling down our heat islands. We're not just putting sedum, we're putting all different kind of things now with our green roofs. We've added more green roofs per year than any other city in the nation for the past 5 years. And so thinking through what is a green roof and putting bees up there, like what does it mean to rewild the city of, we've had ravens nesting in one of our bridges for the first time in 100 years. Mm-hmm. We've got eagles that weren't here for almost 70 years that are nesting back in the city.
Yeah.
And people really appreciate that. So I think that viewing the built environment as integral to the natural environment is one of the things I'm most proud of. We're only on the beginning of that, but I think that what we're thinking about now is that it's not necessarily net zero. It's regenerative building. How does the building that you build actually create more energy and add more back than what it took? How did you repurpose, reuse the materials to build that building? What was the carbon cost? A new standard really is, are you generating more than you're taking? Mm-hmm. Is zero really the goal?
Yeah.
And so I'm very proud of that. We're the first LEED Platinum city in the world. DC is leading, but we're learning from our other cities as fast as we can. I'm really glad that the federal government is back into the game because they will help push us, provide demonstration monies, pilots that we're all going to take advantage of. But again, I'm proud of what we've accomplished, but we have to accelerate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have noticed a difference. I mean, I truly over time seeing the city kind of change with all the new developments come into the city and with the population growth, it's a different feel to the place. And I think that that's a really good question that you raise. Is it a question of net zero or is it actually net plus? It's just, giving back more than you're taking and using that in a system to benefit the city instead of just the building. And that's something which, ties a little bit into that larger argument for legislation like a highway, we're looking at an infrastructure bill possibly late spring, and a large part of that is going to be focused on climate mitigation, adaptation, and resiliency. And all of those areas are areas that our member firms are very engaged with. So it's a good time to be an engineer in the district.
Well, it certainly is, in that how do you switch fossil fuel use over to battery use? Mm-hmm. What's the possibilities? What we've seen in the past 5 to 10 years is we all have seen that the possibility of batteries and their costs has plummeted.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Does that mean that all of our landscape folks should now be using battery powered rather than two-stroke engines, which are some of the most polluting things possible? How do you start putting in meadows and indigenous plants rather than mowing it all the time? Mm-hmm. In our triangle, Mount Vernon Triangle and the Golden Triangle, some of the mm-hmm. highest rents in the city,
yeah.
They're putting in pollinators, they're not mowing their tree boxes, just rethinking. The last thing, that I'll say about DC, when I first came here, pigeons were everywhere. And I'm not saying this is a good or bad thing, just saying that there's things that are happening that sometimes you don't even notice. You go to Union Station and it was like one of those old movies in Paris. Thousands of pigeons would fly in the air if you walked across the plaza in front of Union Station. Now, there's just a reasonable number of small little flocks of pigeons. And that's because raptors have mm-hmm. come back into urban areas. It's true for New York City. That's true for cities. And they're feeding off this easy prey, which are invasive species, pigeons.
Yeah.
but they're in a place where there's no longer DDT. There's a place to nest. We're kind of recreating with whatever, we'll see what our limits of tolerance are, but for our engineers to think through how to leverage the the natural occurrences in the environment to create some balance is a whole new frontier. Yeah. How do you harvest sunlight in a way that people don't notice it inside of a building? How do you reuse water in a way that as it costs more, that you use it on site? There's a whole lot of different possibilities. It's not just normal, geothermal into the ground, it's geothermal. And maybe you're pulling heat off the subway system mm-hmm. in order to heat your buildings in a neighborhood. What is energy? And our engineers think through energy is not just electricity, and it's not just burning something. Energy is happening around us all the time. Humans are energy.
Yep.
You're burning energy when you get someone to take that first flight of stairs instead of taking an elevator, just a different type of energy. Mm-hmm. And so for people that this is their profession and can help us quantify that as goals, rather than just avoiding fossil fuels, but how can they set goals for us to achieve more instead of just saying avoiding fossil fuels, but doing more that's renewable?
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for a fascinating discussion. I hope to be able to have you back on to talk about this more and continue to focus in on this. But really, really interesting stuff. Tommy Wells, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Thank you for taking part in our earlier roundtable discussion. And we look forward to seeing what's going to be happening at the nation's capital next.
Well, thank you for the work that you do. I think there's nothing more important than the subject matter that you're going over today. So thank you.
Yep. Wonderful. And again, this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We will see you next time.
Learn the tools for effective firm leadership with ACEC's Business of Design Consulting, a 6-week virtual course to help you build management expertise to help your firm thrive. Whether you're a CEO looking to mentor your firm's future leaders, or an executive wanting to develop your own leadership skills, the Business of Design Consulting is the place to learn. Act soon. The upcoming session begins on April 6th. To learn more and register, visit acec.org.